Welcome to another episode of Bird's Eye View. I'm Jeff McLean of the Philadelphia Inquirer here along with Zach Berman. And Zach, we're into the off season officially. We had last week off, gave you guys a little bit of a break. But the season is over and we're on to looking at a lot of things that people love to look at, probably even more so than the season, especially when you have a team that's coming off a 7-9 season. We have the draft process now beginning. Senior Bowl starts next week. Mm-hmm. Certainly the playoffs are still going on. And there's some interesting storylines there, some of them relating a little bit to the Eagles. I guess if you're looking at team building, Zach, you were in Dallas. You covered the Green Bay Dallas extravaganza. That was a great game.
It was an awesome game, and seeing Aaron Rodgers execute in that situation, it's amazing. Howie Roseman needed that year away to realize that quarterbacks are important. you look at the four teams left in the playoffs: Brady, Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan, and Aaron Rodgers.
Aha!
We need
a quarterback.
It's pretty clear when you have an elite quarterback. It's the great equalizer, and these games this weekend are going to be outstanding. You're going to be at the Super Bowl, and whatever the matchup is, but just imagine an Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady matchup. I mean, that's going to be it's going to be a Super Bowl for the ages.
That could be epic. I say that in jest about Howie because, again, credit all due credit.
He
went and got the quarterback. At least one that you potentially see having that sort of impact moving forward. We don't know ultimately how good Carson Wentz will be or not be, but very clear. And we've seen this, you know, throughout the years over the last more than a decade that you do need that guy. 9 times out of 10, Peyton Manning last year was not elite.
But they had an elite defense. Unless you have an elite defense, yeah.
The same applied partially to Joe Flacco.
Although he played
Colin Kaepernick when they got to the Super Bowl. Colin was playing pretty well that Super Bowl, that playoffs, same with Joe Flacco. But for the most part, you need the top guys. And I would say right now, these four are arguably the top four quarterbacks in the NFL. Who would you put in?
Well, with Drew Brees' numbers are otherworldly. Now, part of that's the function of the offense.
I don't think he's as good as Roethlisberger.
They haven't won.
Ben wasn't great.
No, but he's great.
He wasn't great, but he made two very clutch throws late in that game. They rode Bell early, but you need someone to make those types of throws.
These four are they're up there. And especially Rodgers, Brady, and the numbers Matt Ryan has are outstanding. But Rodgers and Ben Brady, especially when
they're one
you
and
watch
two.
Them play,
they're exactly. One and two. Who do you take?
I mean, I got to take Rodgers, just because I think he's doing it with less around him. Although the Patriots are without Gronk, and Brady is just he's like a surgeon. Rodgers is playing at a level right now in the postseason where it's I heard, I think it was Troy Aikman say he has that look in his eyes, and he's playing it like it right now.
Right, and they can ride him all the way to the championship. I mean, that's what a quarterback gives you. That's what happened in 2010, first Super Bowl I covered. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, you know, were just hot late in the season, and they ran through the playoffs. They beat
the Eagles
on the way. Yeah.
I mean, just think about this. Back last week in November, Eagles were 4-point favorites against the Packers. Packers were 4-6. Aaron Rodgers says that week, we can run the table, and they haven't lost since. And it's been because of him.
Yeah, and you know, and you look at his cast, he's still got guys. I mean, again, and you know, the quarterback, a great quarterback, an elite quarterback makes the supporting cast better. But I don't see anybody on the Eagles making a lot of those catches that were made. The Jared Cook catch.
Mm-hmm.
No one on the Eagles makes that catch.
No, but no one on the Eagles makes that throw either. I mean,
well, that's true, too.
That was a perfect throw. But
that Cook, might have been his best ever.
I mean, Cook, who I wrote in my story, wears, you know, those size 15 cleats. If it was size 16, you know, that game goes in overtime.
Yeah.
It was that close.
But you just see it week in and week out.
Receivers
making. I mean, there were a few catches. In the Seattle, in every game where you see a guy, he just maybe the ball got a hand in there, and he just kind of makes the extra effort to pull it in, or he's got a strong enough hand to grab it with one hand and stuff like that. Just you constantly see that, and you just didn't see that at the Eagles receivers this year, and that's why I think Carson certainly there'll be an abbreviation to his rookie season. I mean, not abbreviation, an asterisk.
And this is where you give Howie and the Eagles some credit is they tried to sign one in Mike Vick. They tried to draft one in the middle rounds in Nick Foles. They tried to trade for one in Sam Bradford, and eventually they said, we need to get up there to the top of the draft.
Right, we need to sacrifice
exactly
whatever amount in terms of draft picks and try and get this kid. And we'll see. I mean, Dak Prescott was, I thought, good in that playoff game.
Especially in the second, third, and fourth quarters.
When they needed him. I mean, when they had to start throwing. Mm-hmm. They were behind enough, and he was able to do it.
And it was not too big for him. And the Cowboys, they don't show any. Now you never know if Dak can keep it up or whatnot. But they're the team to beat in the NFC East going forward here.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I understand Eagles fans are taking glee in the fact that they lost, and I understand that completely. Yeah. This was a team that, you know, had home field throughout the playoffs. They should have. Theoretically got into the Super Bowl. I don't think, you know, now it's easy to look back now. I mean, but we were saying all along that defense was probably going to be the issue in the postseason, and it was. Now, of course, when you have Aaron Rodgers throwing against you,
exactly.
It's easy to get carved up. But I mean, they played them to the
yeah, they lost on last second field goal to a hot quarterback.
Exactly.
I mean, when you get to this point in the playoffs, those are the guys you got to beat. And It's hard to do.
Right. And then for the Cowboys moving forward, I mean, Dak has that one game under his belt. I mean, obviously you would have rather two or more, three or whatever, but that should help him moving forward.
Sure.
Whereas Carson doesn't have that type of experience. It's different. It's much different in the playoffs. You think it's faster in the regular season. Wait till you get to the playoffs. But since we're talking a little bit about the receivers, that kind of segues to the firing of Greg Lewis last week. We weren't on, obviously, couldn't talk about it, so I figured we'd address it here now. Totally not a surprise.
Nope.
You know, I think I kind of was on this pretty early. I just, right when they hired him, I'm like, it was one of the ones that kind of raised eyebrows. I thought, well, this is probably one of your youngest groups, and you're bringing in an inexperienced coach that's never helmed a position group in the NFL, had 3 years of college experience, 1 year as an offensive assistant with the Saints. And just the way I saw it play out, you know, I'm not around Greg Lewis all the time in the receivers, but just there are certain instances where I just said, I don't think this is the voice they need in that room. That being said, it's hard to get blood from a stone.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of it has to do with like you said, the composition of the room. If you have middle of their career, Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson in that room with Jason Avant, and what you want is a guy who can kind of relate to them, who can manage the personalities, then maybe you go with someone like Greg Lewis. But when you're going with all young players who need player development, you want somebody who has more of a track record of developing those wide receivers, and that's where I think you said it best, getting blood from the stone is that they went in a very specific direction at wide receiver, and their hire for the position coach did not reflect what they were doing at that position.
Right, and they had no one else in the room that, you know, a veteran Jason Avant type voice. I mean, I think Jordan Matthews is a good leader, but he's still young. They did sign a couple of vets, but they're 27-year-old guys, and Reuben Randall and Chris Givens, and not really what you consider good locker room guys. So a lot of mistakes made at that wide receiver position, and in terms of the coaching as well, this past offseason.
And there's something to be said about having a position coach who played the position, who played in the NFL, who can relate to the players. And like I said, there are certain receiver rooms who need that type of personality. But this is a receiver room who needed the veteran coach who knew how to develop players, and you just did not. And maybe they thought Greg Lewis could be that, but when you see those players, Nelson Agholor and Dorial Green-Beckham in particular, the two second-year guys, when you saw where they started in Week 1 and where they finished in Week 17, there was just not the improvement, the development that they needed.
Right, and I think that a little bit certainly falls on Greg Lewis.
Absolutely.
I think they were. This was a case also of them, and certainly in the same way they did at head coach, they kind of went on the other end of the spectrum than they had previously. Bob Bicknell had been the receivers coach before then. I don't know if he did a good or didn't do a good job. I mean, Chishon had his best season Jeremy had his best season. Yeah. I think a lot of that had to do more with the offense than anything.
And
Riley Cooper
and
had his best season.
Yeah. And the player too.
But he was a hard ass. Yep. And I think, you know, that certainly turned off some of the guys. Even, you know, I remember talking to Avant later on. He's like, you know, yeah, we had, you know, Deshaun, and maybe part of the problem there fell on his shoulders. But, you know, I don't know if they had the best receivers coach to kind of handle that situation. So they went with a kinder, gentler wide receiver coach. And that was kind of what I saw out of Greg Lewis, kind of like a chum to the players, a best buddy. Not saying that was always the case. You saw him get on Nelson when he lined
up. In that Seattle game, yeah.
But it was more like, why? Not like, you know, it was a little different than I guess what you'd want typically. So they're interviewing some guys. I mean, because it's the only coaching search, I guess it maybe be pumped up a little more than it probably needs to be. Certainly important, and you want to get the right guy, especially when you're going to have some change this offseason. Two names have surfaced. Actually, I've been able to confirm that they did interview both these guys. Sanjay Lal?
I believe so. I know how to spell it. But
Lal. He's a relatively young guy.
He's been with Oakland. He's been with the New York Jets, and he's been with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, yeah, I've talked to some Jets people. Seem to like him. Another Bob Lamont client.
Yes, which is a bit of a trend.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Bob Lamont is that super agent to coaches, Andy Reid, and coaches and executives.
And 30-year-old Sean McVay, too.
Sean McVay. Los Angeles, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Andy Reid, Howie Roseman.
Doug Peterson.
Mm-hmm. Frank Reich. A lot of them in the Eagles building. Man. Always have been a lot of them in the Eagles
building.
Ben
McAdoo, who was an Eagles candidate last year.
Absolutely. Yeah. The list goes on and on. Marty Morningwick briefly. And now the other name that surfaced. And Zach, you know a lot more about this guy than I do. Mike Rowe.
When I covered him when he was the offensive coordinator at the University of Virginia, was not very productive that year. His father, Al Groh, was the head coach. Mike Groh left. He went to Louisville to be quarterback's coach. Then he went to Alabama, coached receivers there. Then he went to the NFL to coach the Chicago Bears. And they had a lot of production. Now, they had really good players, Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall when he was there. But obviously those two had outstanding seasons with him. And then went to the Rams last year where he was the passing game coordinator. But Kenny Britt was a 1,000-yard receiver there. So his receivers have played well. He's had some talented receivers. And he's someone who's a veteran, but he's someone with a quarterback background. So when you have someone like that, you wonder how long they're going to be on that assignment. If they're looking to move back to quarterbacks, if they're kind of looking for that next step.
Right, right.
But he is someone who has experience in this league, and he's called plays before. So he does have higher aspirations.
Yeah. I mean, you typically want like a David Culley, longtime Eagles receivers coach, now with the Chiefs, kind of a veteran voice, a guy that players look up to. But you're not really concerned about him moving on to another job, moving up that ladder. It happens in almost every position, so you can't be totally concerned about that. You want to bring the right guy in for this coming season. How old's Mike?
In his mid 40s, so I think 45 or thereabouts.
Okay, so he's been around for a while. We'll see. I think I'd be surprised if a hire happened before the Senior Bowl starts next week, which is where you'll see it's almost like a job search. Mm-hmm. You see tons of coaches that you bump into that they're looking for jobs. A lot of the interviews happen there, although they've already held these two, but they may want to interview some other guys when they get down there. But who knows? Maybe they'll hire him in this week as well. I want to switch gears here a little bit. You know, we're starting, obviously, you know, we've looked at now the coaches big picture, but and we talked about this some towards the end of the season, both of us, and wrote about it a decent amount, but there are a number of veterans on this team that could be in trouble in terms of whether they're back because their salaries are hitting a certain they spike or they're still very high. The Eagles don't have the greatest salary cap situation. You still have the luxury to kind of if you're 100% now in rebuilding mold, although I think they think they'll play better this year. But last year, there certainly was kind of a dichotomy to the way they approached the season. Now maybe you feel a little more comfortable moving on from a Jason Peters, mm-hmm. A Connor Barwin, Jason Kelce, Ryan Matthews.
Yeah, I mean, if
who else are we missing? Who else am I missing?
Leotis McKelvin.
I think that's a no-brainer.
Ron Brooks, potentially.
Yeah, but the first four guys
those are the big names. Those are guys who've been here for a long time, and those are guys who have a lot of money attached to their names.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go through all four. Let's start with the highest paid guy, Jason Peters. I think he'd come back at $11.2 million cap hit. Would you bring him back at that number to play left tackle?
To play left tackle, yes. Because I think that's the going rate for a left tackle of his ability.
He's still, I think he's like the 10th highest paid yeah. left tackle, for at least projecting to next
and
year.
And I'd say he's one of the 10 best left tackles in the NFL.
Yeah, one of the five best probably.
So therefore, if he's going to be your left tackle, then yes.
You're okay with that. Even though you're paying Lane Johnson $10 million.
I'm okay with that because I have savings at the quarterback position, and you could open money elsewhere. That being said, if you want
to... And you need to protect your guy.
Yes. Now, if you want to be really active in free agency, meaning if you want to be in the market for one of these big-name players, then Jason Peters is the guy who's going to have to go because you can open that money and you have the replacement there. You have Lane Johnson, who you can move over to the left side. But if you're talking about what's our best chance of having the best offensive line next season, then I think having Jason Peters at left tackle and Lane at right tackle is
at 11.2 million. So you wouldn't go to him and say, okay, you know, or you wouldn't say this to him, but you know, at this stage in his career, does he really want to go to another team and start over again? Yeah. At left tackle.
Well, I might send someone else to say that to him.
Yeah, it won't be Howie.
In all seriousness, though, I would try to restructure, but what leverage do you have? Now, the leverage is calling his bluff, saying, do you really want to go somewhere else?
Or retire.
Yeah, but the leverage that you don't have is he played at a high level this year, he stayed healthy, and he's not overpaid for what he's producing for you. I mean, Connor Barwin is making more than his production would suggest. I think Jason Peters is making what his production would suggest.
Okay, would you go to him and say, okay, we're going to move Lane to left tackle. Would you play left guard?
I wouldn't pay him that to play left guard. Just because I don't know how he would.
Yeah, but that would be all part of
the negotiation.
Would be like, okay, you're going to go to left guard. Obviously, we have to change your salary.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that, frankly. If Jason Peters is on my team, he'd be my team playing left tackle.
Okay. I think I agree with you, too. I mean, I thought he played really well this year.
Yeah, and he was healthy. He
played all 16 games.
Exactly.
He didn't miss many snaps. Now, again, you're rolling the dice again on a guy who's going to turn 35. Did he just turn 35? He turned 35 this month. I don't know exactly what day it is. But you're definitely rolling the dice there. So you better have – I mean, you have Vitae with some games under his belt. Maybe you're going to draft a guy pretty high on the offensive line. You got to start thinking about what you're going to do at that position. Sure. Because Jason, I guess I can't rule it out, but you would think this would be the last year. Okay, let's move on to the next guy, Connor Barwin, who we've talked a lot about.
Yeah, I mean, I would try to restructure him to make him a rotational defensive end. The question, and you wrote a good column on this before, you know, he kind of addressed it elsewhere, which is he'd be willing to take a pay cut,
yeah.
But would it be prudent for him in his career? You take out the affection of Philadelphia and the connection to Philadelphia. If he went to a 3-4 team, could he make more than what his rate would probably be with the Eagles?
Yeah. And I don't think he'll make a lot more, but I think there'll be interest. I could see him in that Packers 3-4, although it's more of a hybrid. I could see him playing for the Chiefs. I could see him playing for the Broncos, whoever. I think there's a bunch of teams I could see him playing on because he has a certain skill set. I thought maybe I'd see him in the 49ers before Chip Kelly got fired. But the defensive end position is a tricky one for the Eagles now because they have all this money vested in Vinny Curry, and you have to...
He needs to start for you.
Yeah. Right, he needs to start for you. Yeah. And now his salary cap really spikes.
So that's why I would try to make Barwin a rotational guy, and if he's willing to do it, and if he's willing to be paid like one, right. then I would try to bring him.
Now, he thinks, he said part of the situation was that he had to play versus the left tackle the majority of the time. And I think that certainly has something to do with it, but that just tells you about his worth. He's not good enough to beat the left tackle. And Brandon should have been moved over there at some point. I mean, I guess, so some teams feel like they can get more production if they put their best guy against the right tackle. And then, but
I also think someone who's playing next to Fletcher Cox is going to be more productive than someone playing next to Benny Logan,
too. And so there's that, yes, there's that value as well. They got nothing from the left side in terms of a pass rush.
Yeah. So that's where
it's the right side.
Yeah. I think you need to get Curry into the starting lineup. You're paying him to be a starter. And Barwin, he understands what the situation is. The Eagles gave him that contract extension without kind of an impetus for it, but he was playing at a really
high... There wasn't much more to that, though.
But
it was chump change.
Yeah, but he was playing at a...
It wasn't an extension.
It was just a restructure.
They just gave him a little more money. They guaranteed his one contract, which he's going to get anyway, and they gave him a little more money.
But he was really good as your left outside linebacker in that 3-4 defense because he could do so much. He rushed the passer well. He set the edge well. You can use him in coverage if you needed him to. And in this defense, and you wrote about this, where you have one directive, rush upfield. It takes kind of the instincts away from you.
Right. I would move on from him because I think if you bring him back, you're bringing back basically the same defensive ends that weren't productive enough in my book.
I can see that.
So you're bringing back your top three guys,
yeah.
Graham, who you want back, Vinny, because you have to take back unless you can find some way to trade him, which is going to be very difficult, unless you're just willing to take junk for him. And Howie's not going to do that on this guy.
No.
He did it for Chip's guys. He's not going to do it on this guy, the guy that he gave a contract to. And he gave him an endorsement a couple weeks ago, a strong one.
And then $7-plus million is a lot of money.
Yeah, so they can't do that. So he's back. And then you bring Barwin back. And then maybe even Marcus Smith back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... I think you want to create a situation where you draft an edge rusher, or you bring in like a kind of a mid tier guy to help,
and then you move
on from a guy who's scheme specific.
Okay.
Kelsey. We don't have to do Ryan Matthews. I think that's pretty much a no brainer.
I think with Kelsey, I'd be more inclined to move on in the 2018 season. But if you feel like Isaac Seumalo can be your starting center and you need to open up, you are taking a cap hit with...
Yeah, I'm trying to get the cap number up here.
I think it doesn't benefit you. It's $2-plus million, and then you save $3-plus million,
okay,
I believe.
You know off the top of your head. Okay,
yeah,
something like that.
But it's a little less burdensome in 2018. I think Kelsey could start for you for one more year, but if you think Isaac's ready and you need to open up money... Then this would be a way to go. The question is this: who's going to be your left guard? Would you rather have Barber at left guard, Seumalo at center, and have some money to spend, or would you have Isaac at left guard and Kelsey at center?
Right, and you know, I think Seumalo certainly showed something. I think I see him starting in the NFL. I don't know how good he'll be and how long he'll be a starter. I think he has the potential. Center's a different animal than guard. You're responsible for a lot more. Certainly, the interviews won't be as good if from the starting center position.
Yeah, that's true.
If Kelsey's gone and Seumalo's in there.
But they'd have a bigger guy.
Opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, what you like about Isaac is he's bigger.
He's athletic, too. Yeah. I could see him. I could see him being in that spot. But with Jason, he hurts you in some ways, but he helps you in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
And so there's, you know, you'd like to have a guy that's great at everything. But there's not many teams that have guys at every position that can do that. And with Jason, you see it when he gets out on the perimeter. I mean, there isn't a faster center in the league. There isn't a more athletic center in the league. Now, the problem is how many of those plays can you run over the course of a game versus... You know, ones in which he can get pushed back, but again, those don't happen as much as you see and you think. I mean, you see him getting pushed back, and it doesn't even affect the play because he's good at leverage. He's just leveraging the guy to a certain side.
I think the big question for all these players is how active do you want to be in free agency this season? And
if you're the Eagles, you shouldn't be. I think you pick one spot and then maybe a couple minor ones.
But if you want to be active like you were last season, you need to make these decisions. Otherwise, I think you can get by with what you have.
Okay, and then Ryan Mathis, I think we both think
they'll move on from him.
Okay, so let's look ahead to the Senior Bowl for our last little segment here. Zach is going to be attending for the first time this year.
Looking forward to it.
Welcome aboard. Yep. It's a kind of a casual, not as casual when I first started covering it. There's a lot more media down there. There's a lot more hangers on, shall we say. But what happens is you have about 4 days of practices before the game, and all the NFL descends on Mobile, Alabama. All coaches, executives, whoever else you want.
Jeffrey Lurie last year.
Media, yeah. Jeffrey Lurie showed up. They're there to watch the players, but they're also there to do a lot more in terms of a lot of it's the draft, interviewing players, preparing for that. But there's also meeting with agents for a lot of the executives or the front office personnel people, starting to kind of formulate your offseason plan.
Yep. Eagles hired Chris Wilson there last year, so you're meeting with coaches, like
right?
You said.
And Howie was interviewing guys to be what would eventually be Joe Douglas there. So the rosters haven't been set, but they also have a bunch of guys invited that have accepted. I think the roster comes out tomorrow. Not a lot of top cornerbacks there. Typically, what happens is almost always exclusively seniors. Occasionally, they'll invite a junior quarterback.
If he's graduating, I believe that's
right. All right, if he's graduating, but. What happens is a lot of the top players a lot of times are underclassmen or they're seniors who are so high in the draft that they don't feel it benefits them to go there and work out during the week. Now, we saw Carson Wentz last year, but coming at from one to a team, it really benefited him, I think, to go there and go through the process and show that he could play at this level. I mean, I think the film kind of spoke for itself in some ways.
In my experience covering the draft, so not the Senior Bowl specifically, but the draft, a lot of your senior talent is on the offensive and defensive lines, and a lot of your underclassmen talent is on the perimeters, so the receiver and the cornerbacks.
Correct, yeah. The speed guys can kind of make the jump earlier than the bigger guys who probably need a little more time to develop.
Exactly.
The Eagles could go on the up in the trenches on what are they? They're either number 14 or 15.
Yep, depending on coin flip.
Coin flip at the combine with the Colts. I know, typically people ask me during the season, and I'm like, I'm not ready to look towards there. I'm so focused on the Eagles, I don't have time to look ahead. And this is where I start to kind of begin my process of looking guys at the draft. You're a little ahead of me on that because you have no children and love college football. Have you looked at the kind of invitees and seen anyone that stood out to you, Zach?
I've looked at the draft prospects more than the invitees, but if you throw someone at me, then I will.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at... someone I think would be.
I know Temple has two players there, and actually Kutztown has a Philly player there.
Yeah, so. Deion Dawkins is an offensive tackle from Temple, 6'5", 320. He'll be there.
And Hassan Ridgeway?
Ridgeway, let me look down here. It looks like, he will be there as well for Temple. I don't see Ridgeway. Maybe he backed out. Oh, no, here it is, Hassan Reddick.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Reddick.
Outside linebacker, 6'1", 230. I'm trying to look at some of the big schools. So this isn't Mike Williams, but Artavis Scott, the other receiver.
From Clemson?
Clemson, yeah. Nice little player. Certainly everyone thinks that Mike Williams will be a guy that the Eagles would love to get at number 14 or 15. I don't know if he'll be there.
I don't know if he'll be there, and I don't know if that's – I've said on here before that I think the Eagles – don't need to draft a receiver in the first round. They have enough of those young prospects. I think they need to address that position in free agency. I think they need to hit on cornerback or edge rusher, two needs in the first round.
Yeah, I'm trying to look. Let me give you a couple cornerbacks. Maybe you know them. So Florida's got two really good cornerbacks. Yep. Ohio State's got two really good cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. Humphreys from Alabama may go first overall. So, but none of those guys are going to be at the Senior Bowl. And the quarterbacks we don't care about, obviously, anymore. At least the Eagles don't. Unless they're looking for a backup, which certainly could be the case. Cornerback. Kyle Fuller. Oh, no, he's a center.
He's a former cornerback for Virginia Tech.
No way. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to give you a team I know that you probably have watched. Oh, I've seen Desmond King.
Yeah, from Iowa.
Yeah, he's actually pretty good.
He's physical. Went to the year expected to be one of the top quarterbacks taken. The fact that some of these underclassmen have kind of jumped him, but you're still looking at probably
mid round, third.
I think earlier than that. I think it could be second round.
It depends upon the team.
Doesn't have the elite height, but is a good physical cornerback
I think he's 5'11".
He's over 200 pounds too. I believe. As well.
How about Cameron Sutton? Have you seen him? Tennessee.
Have seen Tennessee.
I don't think he stood out much.
The corners that I like are really Sidney King from Washington is someone you're going to hear quite a bit about. Both Florida cornerbacks. I like Humphrey from Alabama. Marshawn Lattimore from
Marquez White?
Ohio State.
From Florida State.
Again.
Oh, how about the Southern Cal kid?
Adoree Jackson. He's really electric.
Not going to be here. Yeah. Not going to be the Senior Bowl.
That's another under.
I should clarify that.
Yeah. I was going to say a lot of these guys we're talking about are not.
Yeah, no, they're mid-tier. Yeah, unfortunately, the cornerbacks. Like, for instance, Eric Rowe was there 2 years ago.
Transitioning from safety to corner.
Right, so that was kind of, he ended up being a second rounder, but you know, King didn't come from an elite program, obviously a good program, but not one of the big dogs. Again, everyone's going to be interested in the receivers, but if you look, I'm looking at these receivers, and, you know, it's not... Corey Davis. It's not.
No, there's
a
receiver there from Eastern Washington, Cooper Kupp, who is going to be. You'll hear Carson Wentz's name attached to him because of the level that he's coming from.
Right.
But he's someone who was really productive in college and is going to be a player who's going to get a lot of attention this week. The tight end O.J. Howard from Alabama is one of the best tight ends to come out in a while. You saw him in the championship game.
Yeah.
So he's someone who's going to get a lot of attention down in Mobile as well.
The Eagles have always kind of gotten guys out of. I mean, I think too much has been made of that, but certainly Brandon Graham made waves in 2010. I think that was the first combine Senior Bowl I'd ever attended. I think. Yeah.
Wentz last year.
Well, yeah. Carson Wentz certainly last year. They had Eric Rowe the year before. Danny Watkins made waves, unfortunately for the Eagles, in 2011. So a lot of guys that they've kind of plucked from that pool. But this will be interesting. There's always guys that kind of pop a little bit there.
I'll give you one corner that I'd like there, and that's Jordan Lewis from Michigan.
I've seen him. Big Ten guys I know.
Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of size. But he can really play, and I think it was the Wisconsin game. He made a great play at the end of that game.
Yeah.
He's someone we'll be watching.
Yeah, we'll talk about the cornerbacks.
How well do you know the Syracuse kids these days?
the Syracuse guys aren't really big prospects right now. Maybe in a few years under Dino.
So hopefully we'll talk to you next week. Are we gonna do this in transit, John? From Mobile, Zach and I'll try and carve out. It might not be. It won't be Tuesday.
It won't be the greatest sound quality in history of mankind, but I think we can do it.
Okay.
We'll try and fit it in Wednesday or Thursday. Just give you guys kind of flavor what's going on down there, what we're hearing. Always a lot of good buzz going on down in Mobile, Alabama. Fortunately for me, these last few weeks there haven't been a lot of front office and coaching moves.
It's going to start up, though, and especially the combine's a week later.
Well, for the draft, I'm talking about in terms of like.
Well, there have been enough coaching searches here in recent years that.
Yeah, I think we deserve this little break. Yeah. All right, thanks for joining us for our first podcast of the off season, and we'll be doing this pretty much every week through and through, hopefully.
Look forward to it.
Thanks, Zach.